Someone told me last week, and they've told me before, that they'd like me doing services because I always told a joke. So here's the joke for him. One Easter, a UU minister and a taxi driver both died and went to heaven. St. Peter was at the pearly gates waiting for them. "Come with me," said St. Peter to the taxi driver. The taxi driver did as he was told and followed St. Peter to a mansion. It had everything you could imagine, from a bowling alley to an Olympic-sized pool. "Oh, my word, thank you," said the taxi driver. Next, St. Peter led the minister to a rough old shack with a bunk bed and a little old television set. "Wait, I think you're a little mixed up," said the minister. "Shouldn't I be the one who gets the mansion? After all, I was the minister. I went to church every Sunday and preached God's word." "Yes, that's true," St. Peter rejoined. "But during your Easter sermons, people slept. When the taxi driver drove, everyone prayed." So why should we go into an Easter sermon? I don't recall many Easter sermons in the past from my UU days or from any days. But this one has given me a lot to think about because I had to come up with some information. It seems clear that Universalist Unitarians use Easter as an opportunity to talk about death, Jesus, spring, renewal, resurrection, paganism, and almost everything in between. Given the multiplicity of theologies found in UU congregations, I suppose that this is not surprising. It is rather surprising. Have you read McLean's this week?
No.
Did Jesus really exist? Now a growing number of experts didn't think he existed at all. Rather interesting. But maybe we're celebrating him in a different way than coming back from the dead. The ambiguity around Easter in no way makes me unique among UUs. This congregation, this faith, includes among its friends and members atheists, agnostics, Buddhists, Druze, pagans, Jews, Muslims, not to mention other religious traditions. This can make observing an explicitly Christian holiday like Easter challenging. For us church, Easter remains an awkward holiday for Unitarians. The trumpets sound, we all sing, and Jesus is not resurrected. At least not as God's only Son. So what are we doing here? Why are you here this morning? Why even bother to come? Are we simply creatures of habit who are forgotten why we do the things we do? Are we all dressed up with nowhere to go? Witless participants in a vain show designed to make us feel better about death without offering any good reason. This morning here, we are considering resurrection. Resurrection is at the heart of Easter. It is the victory of life over death, and it's something we should all consider. There is no better time to consider resurrection than now, as the world is reborn around us. Underneath all of the snow, we can't find spring's advent. We can find spring's advent. My daffodils are up. The robins are back. Nature is undergoing its own sort of resurrection. To resurrect something is to bring it back to life. Resurrection, then, is life after death. To consider resurrection, then, we need to also consider death. Who wants to talk about death? I hear that's the least favorable thing that people want to talk about is death. It's not a happy topic. Many people are afraid of it. A friend of mine in Caledonia recently, she's passed away the last week or so. She was in her 90s. Why does it take so long to die? Death, and but her son, there's no better known answer yet because her son is in Iraq. Death is one of the few experiences that unites all human beings. We all will die. In fear of death is something that can be found throughout the human experience. In the face of death, we look toward resurrection. In my old Baptist church in Varsus Corner, Lunenburg County, a lady was about 96, and she was told that she was going soon. I can't die yet. I have so many things I want to do. Death is the focus of Good Friday. That is the day that Jesus was crucified as a criminal between two thieves. Today is Easter, and we are concerned with resurrection. Easter comes after Good Friday. Resurrection is life after death. You will note that I did not say the resurrection. I'm going to talk a little about Jesus' resurrection. I'm mostly going to talk about resurrection in our lives. There are three ways I would like to consider resurrection this morning. The first is literally as life after death. The second is life after a spiritual death, or resurrection as a form of transformation. The third is resurrection as a response to and mirror of the cycles of the natural world. An internship as a chaplain, I am told, is required as part of the process of becoming a minister. As an intern chaplain, you are supposed to learn something about ministering to people in life and death situations. I visited a lady in Lunenburg a few years ago in the hospital. Her husband was my best friend. We went to school together in Alberta and Kentucky. And when I went in, I sat down and she said, "Dean, I'm dying." And it was a shock for me to hear that. I didn't know how to respond. And I said, "I know, we're all dying." And I've ever thought ever since that wasn't a good response. But it was the best that I just wasn't used to dealing with that. And I guess that's why ministers must take an internship. What I have learned is that most you can do for someone who is about to die, whose loved one has died, is to be present. Sometimes you can offer them words of kindness, prayers, or the opportunity for my last minute confession. Usually the most one has to offer in these moments is simply standing in witness and solidarity. A woman was about to be made a widow. A few minutes earlier, her husband's heart had stopped. The staff tried to resuscitate him. They failed. And a minute or two after the man died, and the medical staff cleared away their equipment, the lady went into the room to view her husband's body. The couple had been married for 45 years. Throughout all the time they lived together, raised children together, watched their grandchildren grow, the husband's death came quickly and was unexpected. The chaplain sat with that woman as she spent her last moments with her husband's body. She touched his face. She touched his hands. And then she looked at the chaplain and she said, "After 45 years of marriage, I have to figure out what is next to do." I remember my father dying, leaving my mother with 11 kids, 10 of them boys, the youngest one less than a year, the oldest one just leaving school, and I remember after the funeral my mother saying, "What am I going to do now?" And I leave that alone. This is what resurrection is all about. It is how we revive ourselves after a great loss. It is what we do after death. It is how we came back to the world after we face our grief. We who are left behind have to figure out what do we do next. And we've had some of that in this congregation, even this year. I'm sure that people have said, "What do I do now?" we who are left behind have to figure out what to do. When someone we love dies, it is we, the survivors, who are resurrected, like my mother. What am I going to do now? She did it. She did it well. But she had a lot of help. After death, life goes on. A few weeks ago, the lady's driving a car with her two or three kids out west, I think, and her father-in-law. They're hit. Father-in-law kids are killed. What does she do? You might remember the name of Louise Orchievsky, Dartmouth. She lost two daughters. They were waiting for a bus. A drunk young man came along and killed them. And after a period of years, or maybe I don't know how long it was, she was a good Catholic. She lived near the Baptist Church in Dartmouth. She asked for a meeting in the Baptist Church and invited people to come, especially because she hoped the young man that killed her children was there. And he did come. And he came to the front of the church, and she forgave him. He forgave her. A resurrection, a reconciliation. What about the little kid, 2-year-old, yesterday? They found him in a rope. And when I told someone that, at least someone in my home area, they said, well, why wouldn't the mother be watching him? My mother was watching him. Father was up with him in the yard, with him in the yard. A few years ago, I was babysitting my two grandchildren, both preschoolers, Mason and Jared. Mason graduates from Acadia a week or so. I was hanging clothes on the line. They were out playing in the yard. I hung the clothes. I went in to get more clothes. I come out. Mason was gone. He was about 2 or 3. Mason, where are you? And I ran around like a madman looking for him. And Jared, the 3 or 4-year-old, he had my hand. He said, Grandpa Dean, it's all right. Don't worry. And I felt like saying, please shut up. It's not all right. I have to find her. I couldn't say that. So I went back in the woods. He had like to go back where I had the big dogs, down to the water, across the river, the Lahave River, across my street, rather. And then I thought, well, who should I call? Mother? Police? What? So I went in the house to make a phone call, and the phone was ringing. And the next door neighbor. Are you looking for a little boy? Yes, good man. I thought I should go over during this Easter season and tell him how much I appreciate that. I imagine that Jesus' disciples taught much that way as the woman I described earlier after his crucifixion and death. They had to figure out what to do next. Jesus was supposed to be the Messiah. In Jewish tradition, the Messiah ushers in the Messianic age when peace comes to the world and all is made right. Jesus was not supposed to die. He was supposed to assume the mantle of kingship, rid Israel of the Romans, and bring about an age of peace and prosperity. And don't you hear seniors saying now, especially parents, that's not the way it happens. I was supposed to go before my children, but sometimes children go first. Jesus' arrest made no sense to his disciples. They did not know how to react. Peter, his closest advisor, follower, denounced him not once, but twice. He suffered like a criminal. He was beaten. And the previous reading said he was a liberal. He was put to death because he was a liberal. I thought I had better send a message to Justin Trudeau. And then he was crucified between two thieves. His life was undignified, and in the end he even feels that God has abandoned him. His words on the cross were, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani? My God, why hast thou forsaken me? What were his followers supposed to make of this? Christian mythology suggests that after death comes resurrection. On the first Easter, Jesus' followers went to the tomb only to discover it empty. His body was gone. The earliest gospel ends not with an appearance of Jesus, but a young man dressed in a white robe who tells three of Jesus' followers he has been raised, he is not here, and that Jesus does not make very many corporal appearances. The later Gospels have him present only to show himself to reassure everyone that he's been resurrected. He makes a brief appearance in the Acts of the Apostles, mostly to explain why no one sees it. Like Elijah and other prophets, Jesus ascends to heaven. From there, the stories in the Christian New Testament very quickly shift from that focus on Jesus to that focus on his disciples. So even when we look at our friends, they lose a partner, they lose a lover, they lose a kid. We look on them. What are they going to do next? There is a good reason for this. After Jesus' death, it was his disciples and not him who were resurrected. So after we have a period of sadness, we have to be resurrected. Faced with the loss of their teacher, whom they believed to be the Messiah, they had to figure out what to do next. Their lives had to continue. Maybe you read the paper yesterday of the young police officer, a lady that was killed recently, and someone she had just saved from the car wreck just appreciated her so much. So they tried to make what to do next. Their lives had to continue. They created the resurrection story. Jesus lived on in their hearts, so they felt they must live on some other form as well. At the beginning of this year, I started making a list of all the people that live on in my heart. Jesus might be one of them, but I wasn't very close to him. But I'm thinking of Mandela, Martin Luther King, and hundreds of others that are have had a great influence in the past. A great prophet, his statement of simultaneous presence and absence would be inconsistent with other prophets in Judaism who ascended to heaven but to continue to influence. So isn't that the way with death, with us? My mother is gone, but my mother is alive. And people from this congregation, we lost quite a few since I came here 20 years ago, but many are still very much alive. After the crucifixion, the disciples reconstituted their community and began to focus on how Jesus lived on in each of them. They tried to become like their teacher. They dedicated their lives to God. They fed the poor. They healed the sick. They passed on Jesus' teachings as best they understood. They struggled to build their community, and they shared with each other. And if you look at the Christian churches, they still do. Many still do, and we're grateful for that. They were transformed, and they in turn transformed the world. And if it hadn't been for the disciples who resurrected from the death of Jesus and built something, we wouldn't have churches today. We wouldn't have Christianity. Jesus' death led to his disciples to experience a kind of spiritual death. They fell into a black hole. But after their despair, they experienced a spiritual rebirth and rededicated their lives to their master's teaching. We all have moments of crisis that seem like spiritual death to us. Anybody in this room who has not had a time when you felt like you just could not go on? Anyone who has never doubted your abilities, felt a shocking and numbing loss, or experienced a moment when you knew the depths of your own imperfections? I suspect that we have all known times like these. It is in times of spiritual death that we can be at our most vulnerable. We can become numb to the world, withdraw, and go into a sort of long, emotional hibernation. The last time I spoke in this church, I spoke of a young gentleman, in Bridgewater, that I met sitting at Tim Hortons. And he said that it was in the Iraq War. He was an American, Jewish, son of a rabbi in California. And he had asked me a few weeks ago to loan him $1,500. And I said, no, I can't do that. Would you ask your church to do it? Loan him $1,500. Not loan, give him. No, I wouldn't do that. Wouldn't be right. Then I was going home and going back and forth as an advantage from Bridgewater Halifax because I hear the CBC and I hear a lot of good programs. And there was a program on PTSD. And I've determined that that's David's problem. And because I've asked him on social occasions, he was here once, he said, Dean, I don't like to go places. They ask me questions. And I, in my ignorance, would say, well, what's wrong with the question? Why are you here? Why aren't you in the States? If you have all these physical problems, why aren't you there and taking advantage of the veterans' things? And I think I told him, my nephew in Massachusetts, he was wounded in one of the wars, and he works with veterans. And my nephew said, tell him, give me his name, and I'll look after him. But he won't do that. And I'm wondering if that's not his problem. He can't talk about it. And I've heard of veterans who can't do that. And not only veterans, it's many other people. There's a lovely poem I have, but it's too long to read here. The Inner Jewel speaks of someone who has been living in a sort of state of spiritual death for many years. It's about the story of a resurrection. The man in the poem begins in a suffering, weary traveler. He's angry. He's unkind and ungrateful. After many years of anguish, he encounters a religious community that through kindness and contemplation offers him a chance for transformation. Almost unwillingly he accepts. And in doing so, he learns that he had the ability to transform himself. Again, going home, and I think it was last week, I heard a program on CBC, and a woman was talking, and she didn't go to church. And all of a sudden, she was attracted to an Anglican church. And she went. She said, well, I was so embarrassed. I didn't want my friends to know there. I went in hiding. I never talked about it. I kept my car at the back. But she stayed. She's found a new life for her. She said, I still question many things, but it's given me a family. When Jesus' disciples struggled out onward after his death, they discovered that they had all the resources for them to build their community. Jesus had awakened something within them. This is where Paul gets it wrong. The resurrection that Jesus gave to his first followers was a corporal one. It was a spiritual one. Paul is right in 1 Corinthians, a traditional Easter reading, when he argues that resurrection involves a fundamental change. And again, it's like me with this lady dying. Dean, I'm dying. Yeah, I know, we all are. I need a fundamental change in my attitude toward that. It is clear in that text that Paul believes that the resurrection of all Christians will be literal. People will be raised from the dead, and living will have their bodies made immortal. Here, I think, probably Unitarians think, Paul is wrong. But he is right to argue that the resurrections that we experience in our own lives, the moments that we change, leave us not the same as before. Resurrection alters us. When it does, we discover that we already have what we need within us. This is a secret of spiritual resurrection. Something or someone dies. Life continues, and we have to figure out what happens next. Could be even a dog. Somebody's who lives with a dog, and the dog dies, and they can't get over it. What happens next? Spring serves as a powerful reminder of this, and I suspect that most religious stories of rebirth and resurrection, and there a lot besides that of Jesus have the roots and the cycles of nature. After winter comes the spring. Fall is the time of death. Winter is the time of dormancy. Spring is a time for birth, renewal, and rebirth. Doesn't that sound like we even had a shock? In a period of dormancy. And we come back, hopefully. We renew. We get rebirth. We are a creature of the earth, and our religious nature is entirely response to the mysteries of the world. It makes sense that we celebrate spring, even if we wrap them up in other theological trappings. During spring, the dead do come to life again, though often in natural forms. Last year's leaves become this year's fertilizer, which in turn become next year's leaves. That makes me wonder what happens to me. What do I fertilize when I go? I hope it's a rich soil. The earliest pagan holidays celebrated spring and Earth's transformation unabashedly, as spring was transformed from rigid, infertile ground, alienated from the sun's life-giving rays, to wet, sticky mud, ripe with seed. Our ancestors honored the world's rebirth. Often they did this through telling stories of the death and rebirth of their God. When searching for new beginnings in the face of death, spring reminds us that they are possible, knowing that we can find them, that they are part of life, and life's cycles is ultimately what it means to consider resurrection. It means to consider the possibility of transformation, even in moments of despair. It means to remember that winter is always followed by spring, and that as long as there is life, life will continue. There is so much death in our world, literal and figurative. And I've heard of a lot of refugees over in Lebanon area. They're shut up in little camps, almost like we do our hens and our pigs. They don't have room to spread out or fly or do things that are normal. And one man was saying, why don't you put us all to death? We can't do anything here. We can't live in here. We can't live like this. So much pain, so much loss, so many people wrapped in tombs, some of their own making, and some thrust upon them. And I'm thinking, some of their own making, and I think it's maybe we have a role in that, getting them out of their tomb, helping them out of their tomb. Let us go forth from this place determined to roll back those stones, to heal the wounded, to raise the dead. Life has come again. Life has come again. Love has come again. Hallelujah. Indeed. A tomb is no place to stay. Amen. And blessed be.